I don't know how, but he's tightened it up significantly. This whole interview so far, he's done a really, really, really good job where every single statement is layered with propaganda terms.
So my point is, I think the final solution for Israel has not been achieved yet, right?
I don't know how they got away with adopting this language also.
The fall of the USSR was one of the greatest catastrophes of the 20th century.
Прежде всего следует признать, и об этом я уже говорил, что крушение Советского Союза было крупнейшей геополитической катастрофой века.
Just wait, listen, maybe you'll agree.
Oh, I sent you a Trump thing you're going to watch.
Well, what about this Hassan thing?
Sure. Do you want to be in this channel?
Oh my God, a 54-minute bonger interview? Oh, shit.
Yeah, I've been waiting for you to watch that.
Oh,
it's going to be awesome.
No.
He's a retard for doing this.
Why would he agree to this? What?
He wanted to do it in person, too, which would have been awesome. I'm actually sad they banned his ass.
Holy shit. Hutch didn't make it through this. Be careful. What does that mean?
It's too brutal.
That it would be in person, but instead you're joining us, I think, from LA for reasons we can get into. We will get into it in full, but it must have been a little bit of a curious week for you in terms of your relationship with the UK.
Yeah, I mean, I still got much love for the UK, and I feel bad for all of my friends out there fighting the good fight. But yeah, I was definitely not expecting the Labour government to be the government that bars my entry into the country, especially considering that I've been to the UK on numerous occasions, both under Keir Starmer's rule, but certainly under Tory leadership. For the past decade or so, unimpeded. And I've delivered numerous speeches inside of the United Kingdom until this very last incursion, I guess.
But it's the case, isn't it, that you're still planning to, or the Oxford...
Hold on.
Holding? What are you doing? Everybody's waiting for this video.
Oxford Union, which is one of the events that you were coming to address or coming to undertake, that's still going to go ahead.
Oxford Union actually defended both myself and Cenk Uygur, my uncle, and wanted to continue putting on the event as an act of defiance, I guess, in violation of the spirit of this travel ban.
So your understanding is that you are basically prohibited from coming to the UK for the foreseeable future? Have you actually had any communication from the Home Office?
No, the only communication I've gotten from the Home Office is the revocation of...
Oh, well, what's that? Oh, is the revocation of my ETA?
My ETA?
Oh, there wasn't an actual visa. Oh, and he has no idea if he's banned or not. He has no idea. Oh, Drew, wow, crazy. Didn't Dusty say that like a week or two ago? Oh.
And they told me that it's not something that I can oppose, and that if I would like to travel to the UK, I have to get a different visa.
Well, the ETA is not a visa at all, but you would have to apply for a visa. Yes, so close. You almost are being honest, but that's cool.
But I have to apply for like an actual visa.
Ah, there you go.
Given how
yes.
close this was to the actual travel date, the suggestion was pretty clear. They just did not want me to attend the events that I was supposed to attend inside of the United Kingdom. Especially considering, from what I understand, that the visa process for all these other visas, which is totally unique for an American citizen, by the way, because our countries are supposed to have a special relationship, which implies that as an American citizen, visa-free travel was the norm into the UK for the longest time, and the visa on arrival is the way that things go nowadays. I had taken the precaution to get the ETA ahead of time just to make sure that there were no issues, and the fact that they revoked it so close to travel implies that they just wanted to not allow me in. I had taken the precaution to get the ETA ahead of time just to make sure that there were no issues.
I had taken the precaution to get the ETA ahead of time, but that's not true, is it? Didn't he go do the Oxford thing a few months ago? He already had an ETA that from that. I think they're good for... How long are they good for? Fuck, I should know because I filled one out. Is it 2 years or is it 6 months or 12 months or... How long is UK ETA good for? Is it 2 years? Yeah, okay, so he's...
He would probably
just
say his last one expired and then
no,
he got a new one recently.
He's fucking lying, Mouton. Just because you said that,
true.
That's going to be one more... That's... Hold on, let me turn my camera off. That's going to be one more... for you and your mom today. Stop! Don't make that noise.
And the fact that they revoked it so close to travel implies that they just wanted to not allow me in. And also, they told me I can still apply for a different type of visa, but no guarantees there.
We'll return to that, because I want to talk a bit more broadly about politics, but about American politics and UK politics as well, because you've got a lot of insight and a lot of interesting things to say. I mean, I suppose just on it, though, actually, funnily enough, even though your prohibition into the UK has received a lot of attention here, in terms of kind of the question of borders and of people getting into one country or another, in the UK at the moment, a lot of the discourse, I think, in European politics as well, is the idea of actually with the World Cup coming up, that lots and lots of Brits or Europeans, particularly those who might have said critical things about the Trump administration, might not be allowed into the US. Now, as a journalist who regularly goes into the US...
We didn't have the ETA 2 years ago, so he's just lying.
I have to say, I've never...
Who?
Hassan.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Encountered this myself, but this is a sort of peculiar time, isn't it, when we've got European countries and American countries, you know, two very close sets of allies sort of across two continents, talking about whether or not we're going to let our citizens mutually in to each other's territories.
Yeah, it's absolute bedlam. There is no more coalition, or rather, the coalition of forces that are taking shape right now are some of the most dangerous and most odious types of politics that I've ever experienced in my lifetime. You have the MAGA movement, which by my estimation is almost turning into this behemoth of an international fascist movement, really, that has close associations with both reform in your country and also Restore Britain as well. And there's this weird allegiance where we're becoming more toxic against one another, and the age of international rule-based order is seemingly being cast aside.
When did you notice this, you fucking retard? Wait, what? I forgot that this guy talks about actual politics sometimes. Oh my god. I'm sorry. Hold on. I just want to... Fuck me, dude. One second.
There is no more coalition, or rather, the coalition of
administration might not be allowed into the U.S. Now, as a journalist who regularly goes into the U.S. and has had a few things to say in my time about the Trump administration, I have to say I've never encountered this myself, but this is a sort of peculiar time, isn't it, when we've got European countries and American countries, you know, two very close sets of allies sort of across two continents, talking about whether or not we're going to let our citizens mutually in to each other's territories.
Yeah, it's absolute bedlam. There is no more coalition, or rather, the coalition of forces that are taking shape right now are some of the most dangerous and most odious types of politics that I've ever experienced in my lifetime. You have the MAGA movement, which by my estimation is almost turning into this behemoth of an international fascist movement, really, that has close associations with both reform in your country and also Restore Britain as well. And there's this weird allegiance where we're becoming more toxic against one another, and the age of international rule-based order is seemingly being cast aside. I find it to be very dangerous. I find it to be very worrisome. I don't think it's just about, you know...
There's some truth to that. Yeah, no shit! This has been the last, like, six, seven... Oh, fuck me. Years. You're getting banned. 7 days. Who's saying it? This has been happening for almost a decade. Yeah. It's just funny that he's like, can you guys believe that, like, visas and shit are getting revoked and everything now, guys? Like, that's, like, fucking crazy. Yeah, welcome to Brexit.
He only cares when it happens to him.
Yeah, no shit. Like, this has been, like, a thing that has been happening for the past decade.
No. Being able to enter the United States to go watch your favorite football team, you know, defeat the Americans or whatever. There are far greater consequences, I think, later down the line. But it has been interesting to see the universal condemnation of this act from places that I never thought would actually defend me. You know, pro-Israel outlets such as the Free Press or
Universal condemnate. Well, I don't know.
Even the Economist and the Washington Post editorial board have all collectively panned the British government's decisions. But then there's also a lot of right wingers who actually celebrated it. And I find that very odd as well, because they're probably coming to the United States of America to watch their national teams play. And what if their travel is impeded in the same process?
It's interesting, just to take you back to that phrase you just used. You think that there is an international fascistic organization that's forming, and you would elide the MAGA movement and reform and restore. And Restore is an interesting one, because of course it's, I think a lot of listeners and viewers to this show might be surprised that Restore is even known in the United States, surprised it's even known across the UK. But I was at CPAC in Dallas not long ago, and actually I was taken aback, actually stunned, by the number of people who knew who Restore were, who knew who Rupert Lowe, the MP for Great Yarmouth, who on paper would be quite an obscure figure in the United States, but actually no, he's very well known.
Yeah, and apart,
he is absolutely not. Less than fucking 3% of Americans know anything about UK politics. I don't know where that guy was hanging out, but no, nobody in the US knows what fucking Reform or Restore or UKIP or any of these fucking things are. But okay.
The reason is because I think we live in the age of the internet, and like I said, there is an international component amongst far right elements in European society, certainly, or even South Korean society, as a matter of fact. I mean, Charlie Kirk, before he was assassinated, had traveled to Japan and South Korea, and through these massive events.
He said he was at CPAC. Oh, sure, yeah. If he's at like a special political action conference or whatever, yeah. But again, this is nowhere near the norm. Like, you wouldn't say these people are well known.
With the South Korean far right, and they were all wearing MAGA hats. I find that both fascinating and also terrifying at the same time, that there is this amalgamation of right-wing forces that are not necessarily adjusted to their own local considerations and their own local problems, but instead they get their notes from MAGA and they wear MAGA merch, which I find very strange. I feel like it's not even a principled version of nationalism that you would expect from these old school fascists. It's very interesting to observe.
What do you make of, as someone who has probably been thinking about British politics a little bit more than you might have otherwise been, when you see where we are in British politics, you see Nigel Farage, you talk about Rupert Lowe and Restore, what do you make of where British politics is at the moment, and particularly in relation to US politics? Do you see US politics
utter devastation?
Devastation. Why do you think devastation?
Utter devastation. One of the early warnings that, I mean, it's not a secret that I was a big fan and big supporter of Jeremy Corbyn. Indeed. and still am now a friend to Jeremy Corbyn as well. You know, honored to know him.
Yeah, me, him, and Memdani, we all go to the bar and we actually hang out like every day, and you know, we're actually best fucking friends.
And he's defended you this week.
Yeah, he has, and so has Zach Polanski. I've you know, collaborated with Zach as well at times. So what I will say is,
Polanski, is that the boob grower Green Party guy in the UK?
Since the Corbyn ouster, It was very clear that Labour was headed down a very dangerous path, going back to Blairite versions of the party, if not far worse, right-wing elements in the party.
Keir Starmer, one of the furthest right-wing people in all of the UK, when Corbyn fucked up over and over and over and over and over again. God forbid we actually swap out leadership in our Labour Party. God forbid.
Taking the entirety of Labour. And one of the warnings that I delivered on the night of the election after Keir Starmer won, with less votes than Jeremy Corbyn had, ironically enough, was that if the Labour government continues down the line of austerity and refuses to address some of the economic hardships.
It's crazy that we have like an actual foreign paid propagandist that is now fluently using the language like of international propaganda. I don't know if he like went more mask off this year or if he's gotten more like coaching or training from whatever international, whatever foreign agents are working with this guy. But like, God, he's very fluent now in the language of this like weird propaganda shit, like way more than he was in the past.
That people are experiencing that has caused a lot of the former Labour strongholds to turn into areas.
Can you spell that propaganda shit out? I don't understand. Austerity is, in America, we just call it like balancing the budget or whatever. Austerity is when you tighten up on your government spending. You're basically hurting your welfare state, kind of, in order to balance your budgets more. It's not really a term we use in American politics, but it's a big term that's used in a lot of European politics when they talk about like the difference in spending between the left and right sometimes. And all of these words, everything he's ascribing to the left, because they always have to have the uniparty. Corbyn was like a more left-wing guy. I think he was considered a relatively ineffective party leader for the left in the UK. Like, I think they had some of the worst election losses in like the fucking history of all of Labour. Some people around him were kind of tagged on some anti-Semitic shit that was maybe a little bit overblown, but was probably a little bit more true than they would want to have you believe it was. I think Corbyn was further left than like Keir Starmer, but like I think he's doing a decent job. Nobody likes to hear that, and everybody fucking likes to hate on everything. But because he does have to balance the UK spending to some extent. They can't spend infinite amounts of money. He does have to like tighten up a little bit on immigration. They can't just infinitely tax every single person. So like it is his balancing act. But to throw all of the funding under the bus and to call it like, oh, austerity, 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 austerity. The goal is just make it so that, oh, Labour and Tories are the same or left and right are the same. It's always the uniparty. Starmer. It's just annoying because he's like, these are like European words and he's using them on a European show and he shouldn't even fucking know this because it's just propaganda. God, I hate this guy so much.
The entirety of Labour. And one of the warnings that I delivered on the night of the election after Keir Starmer won, with less votes than Jeremy Corbyn had, ironically enough, was that if the Labour government continues down the line of austerity and refuses to address some of the economic hardships that people are experiencing, that has caused a lot of the former Labour strongholds to turn into areas captive.
Will he mention any of some of the big driving causes of hardship? I also hate that. I hate that in America, we can never talk about COVID. It's like a thing that didn't happen. And then in the UK, I noticed this when reading up on UK politics. UK has a version of COVID and it's called Brexit and nobody ever brings it up. It's crazy. They will never talk about Brexit, especially no matter if you're talking about conservatives or if you talk about Labour, because I think there were a lot of people in the country that were for it. Nobody will bring up Brexit. They'll be like, man, our labor markets have gotten strangely fucked and our economy has kind of like fallen a little bit off a cliff and it's been really hard to do things, you know, for the past decade. And it's like, well, what's going on? Well, there was the energy squeeze in like 2022, 2023. Yeah, COVID kind of hurt us in 2020. It's like, okay, World War II.
That's it.
It's like, wait.
If by reform and first the Tories and now even reform, I was worried that far-right elements were going to overtake British politics. And they have. Certainly did. As a matter of fact, the Green Party's surge has only been the last saving grace of British politics to a certain degree, considering that I think in the absence of this Green Party resurgence, Labour would be eviscerated. And then you would have an eclectic group of, I guess, independent MPs and maybe your party as well, to a certain degree, try to put a strong opposition against this behemoth that the Reform Party has become.
Are you talking to Polanski much? Are you advising Polanski?
That's a kind of a good question. I wish people would just break apart the propaganda more. It's just crazy to me that you can just talk and say like so much shit. And as long as it's like grammatically correct, you can kind of get away with it. But nobody will actually sit down and have you break down any of the stuff you're saying. But, you know, whatever.
I wouldn't say I'm advising him, but, you know, I chat with him every now and then.
He's such a clout obsessed fucking loser.
He's particularly in the last couple of weeks. I mean, he's receiving, as you might imagine, ferocious media attention. And a lot of the newspapers are coming for him in a very big way. And they found some things that are embarrassing to him and so on, some of which he's acknowledged. What would you say to him as someone who has been very, very successful in corralling the power of digital media on the left? What would you say to him about how to deal with the traditional media?
Be bold. Be brave. Don't be afraid to be contentious at times. Stay on message always. I think one of the things that Zoran Mamdani, the mayor of New York City, did so expertly in spite of the
also my good friend
barrage of attacks and heinous smears that he was receiving, not dissimilar to what Zach Polanski is currently going through, was he would always play this intellectual judo where...
Wait, hold on. Not dissimilar to what Polanski is going through. I don't think there were any personal attacks that worked against Mamdani, because I just don't... The guy seems... I'm not knocking him when I say this, but he seems like relatively boring personally. Like, I don't think there were any, like, sex scandals or cheating or drug shit or crazy. Like, I think, like, the quote-unquote the craziest stuff that came up was that he was probably a lot more of a socialist or communist, like, 5 years earlier, I think, when he was on the... Was it the city council or whatever? But it didn't seem like there was much to bring up regarding him, so...
Where he would consistently reframe the conversation back to, and dare I say, expertly, back to a key...
Dare I say, expertly...
policy of his platform. I think this was a major issue with Jeremy Corbyn. The anti-Semitism smears were unfounded and totally ridiculous. Uh-huh. However, it wasn't necessarily the idea that the broader British public found Jeremy Corbyn's politics to be odious and that he was a sincere anti-Semite. There was a little bit of hysteria there for sure. But it was the fact that he constantly found himself addressing these accusations, because we have a finite amount of time on every broadcast.
I hate that everybody in the world is noticing this. Like, unfortunately, Hassan is right here. Don't address it. Just ignore it and move forward and go on friendly media platforms and have them amplify your message over and over and over again. That's it. That's all the media is these days.
Especially when a politician is running for office. And if you utilize that time consistently on the defense, consistently having to answer accusations that people have made about you without actually addressing what your platform is or even why people might be very upset at you, because oftentimes it's not the smear itself that is valid, then people are only going to remember you as an unserious person that is constantly in... controversy.
Is that completely fair, Hassan Pak? I mean, remember that the Equality and Human Rights Commission in this country conducted an investigation into anti-Semitism into the Labour Party, and it concluded that Jeremy Corbyn, when he had led it, had committed unlawful acts related to anti-Semitism. Key findings included Labour was responsible for unlawful harassment, discrimination, there were serious failings of leadership, and inadequate process for handling anti-Semitism complaints. Two things can be true at once. It can be true to say that people who perhaps had ulterior motives decided that they wanted to use some of this to try and undermine Jeremy Corbyn, but it can also be true to say that Jeremy Corbyn led the Labour Party during a period...
Oh, what did I say? Probably not quite as bad as some people... claimed it was, but probably worse than the Corbyn and the Labour people would have you believe. Right, yeah.
When it did things that it shouldn't, and it didn't do other things that it should have done with regards to anti-Semitism.
Well, this ironically also dovetails back into my travel ban as well. But I think if what happened to Jeremy Corbyn was taking place right now in 2026 with the current understanding of the actions of Israel or the ideology of Zionism.
Oh, we brought it back to Israel. Hell yeah. Let's go.
That's where he's comfortable.
Or the history of the development of the Israeli state, I believe that these attacks would not have been anywhere near as successful. Because what we consider to be anti-Semitism, which I find to be morally repugnant, let's just make...
Is actually, yeah, I hate anti-Semitism, but these motherfuckers just make anti-Zionism anti-Semitism. So you can't even criticize the Zionists in Israel.
That clear and completely unacceptable, as does Jeremy Corbyn, in the conversations that I've had with him at least, was oftentimes matched up with criticisms of Israel or even mm-hmm. a defense mm-hmm. or even analysis conducted mm-hmm. on why certain militancies exist in opposition to Israel.
Kay from YouTube, thank you for gifting 8 tier 3 subs. Holy shit. I mean, whatever. Like, it's just like the rambling and the yapping is just crazy to me.
It seems like he says a lot of things that you're picking up on that I just would... Not,
yeah, I know.
Like,
because you flood with all the messaging or whatever, but there's just like so much, like everything is just so much bullshit that he talks about. And then people just let him yap and ramble. Like, hold on. Like, I mean, my Chrome/YouTube is broken.
Jeremy Corbyn led the Labour Party during a period when it did things that it shouldn't, and it didn't do other things that it should have done with regards to anti-Semitism.
Well, this ironically also dovetails back into my travel ban as well. I think
one... The implication is that his travel ban, we're about to tie all this together. The travel ban is because of Israel and the forces of Zionism, okay?
If what happened to Jeremy Corbyn was taking place right now in 2026 with the current understanding of the actions of Israel or the ideology of Zionism or the history of the development of the Israeli state, I believe that these attacks would not have been anywhere near as successful. Because
so the only reason why the attacks were successful in the past against Corbyn was because they were led by Jewish interests. But today, we have a better understanding of how corrupt the Jew is and how corrupt Israel is, so we would be able to salvage Corbyn's reputation better. The only reason Corbyn was attacked in the past was because of the forces of Israel that now we understand better, so we would have prevented it, is what he's saying here.
What we consider to be anti-Semitism, which I find to be morally repugnant, let's just make that clear, completely unacceptable, as does Jeremy Corbyn. In the conversations that I've had with him, at least.
Corbyn is not anti-Semitic. I know personally. I've talked to him all the time.
Was oftentimes matched up with criticisms of Israel, or even a defense, or even analysis conducted on why certain militancies exist in opposition to Israel.
So the only reason why I hate this last talking point. Today, people understand that when you're complaining about anti-Semitism, it's actually just complaints about criticizing the state of Israel, because you can never do that. And Israel is always trying to defend itself by saying, if you criticize them, you're being anti-Semitic. And now here he's downplaying every single criticism. So like Hassan is not, so like this thing of like just giving an analysis of why opposition groups appear to fight against Israel. There is a good reason why opposition groups appear and why they fight Israel. That doesn't mean you have to say, I would vote for Hamas over the IDF, or I would, I think Hezbollah is awesome and cool, and they've got the coolest flag, and let's watch the Houthis, take over this ship, and it's actually fucking awesome how they kidnap people just because they're opposed to the genocide, right? But he downplays every single thing he and his ilk have been involved in to make it sound like, oh, we were just doing a simple analysis of why opposition appears to Israel. But like, I think it's
analysis conducted on why certain militancies exist in opposition to Israel, prescribed terrorist organizations such as Hezbollah, or prescribed terrorist organizations such as Hamas.
Prescribed? I haven't even heard this word before. My guess is when he says prescribed terrorist, he's saying that like other people have decided they're terrorists. So he's not like fully buying into the labeling of terrorist organization. Is that what he means there? Or prescribed, officially forbid, like, ban, or condemn something as unlawful or harmful. Prescribed. He's downplaying the terrorist label there for that word. So prescribed terrorist organization has a prescribed terrorist organization.
Any kind of mention or any kind of conversation with these prescribed terrorist organizations was deemed.
I mean, no one would doubt.
What a word slap. Also, I don't know if he's getting training for this from a publicist. I've never seen him do stuff like this before. And I feel like I've watched a lot of Hassan slop. I feel like he is emoting differently with his face to make it look like he's thinking about the things that he says. So in the past, he kind of always like looks down. I don't know if he's looking at his monitor for talking points or more just he just tends to kind of look down when he talks. I've noticed he's doing this thing more now where he kind of like looks up and to the side, which is usually what people do when they're trying to think of something. I don't think your eyes are accessing a part of your brain. I think it's just like a natural like human thing. You're just like, oh, fuck, when was that thing or whatever? You kind of like look up. And then he just did a thing at the end here where he's like scratching his chin, thinking about a thing. He's not really thinking, though. These are just like rehearsed propaganda lines. I've never in my life seen him do this thing before, though.
That it shouldn't, and it didn't do other things that it should have done with regards to anti-Semitism.
Well, this ironically also dovetails back into my travel ban as well. But I think
this is how he normally speaks.
What happened to Jeremy Corbyn was taking place right now in 2026 with the current understanding of the actions of Israel or the ideology of Zionism, the development of the Israeli state. I believe that these attacks.
I feel like I haven't seen him look up like this and think about things.
Anywhere near
before,
as successful. Because what we consider to be anti-Semitism, which I find to be morally repugnant,
of course.
Let's just make that clear.
And, I think he's going to do it again.
Completely unacceptable, as does Jeremy Corbyn.
He looks at his monitors. That's normal.
That was the
chin
thing?
Stroking here.
I don't think I've ever...
No. I feel like people have talked... Yeah, like you look kind of dumb when you're saying this. You need to look like you're contemplating more. I don't know if I've ever seen him do that before.
Jeremy Corbyn, in the conversations that I've had with him at least, was oftentimes matched up with criticisms of Israel or even...
Oh, actually, that's a really good point. Somebody said, I think it's just because there's no Twitch chat. It might be because he doesn't have a chat that he's actively looking at. His mannerisms might be a lot different in that environment. Mm. That could be true, actually.
And a defense or even analysis conducted on why certain militancies exist in opposition to Israel. Prescribed terrorist organizations such as Hezbollah or prescribed terrorist organizations such as Hamas. Any kind of
saying
mention...
Saying prescribed
or any kind of,
is such a... like slimy fucking word.
Yeah. It's because he doesn't want to own the label. Yeah. Or he doesn't agree with it, obviously. Yeah.
Of conversation with these prescribed terrorist organizations was deemed.
I mean, no one would doubt that there is tremendous anger, and many people would say absolutely rightful and righteous anger towards the actions of the government of Israel under Benjamin Netanyahu. Would you also accept, though, that sometimes, and perhaps this happens under Jeremy Corbyn, and perhaps you yourself at times have been guilty of this, that sometimes that fury, which again many people might think is rightful or righteous against Zionism, and in particular the type of Zionism that is prosecuted by the Netanyahu government, has spilt over into anti-Semitism, and that it is best to and it is right to sometimes acknowledge that fact and be honest about that fact?
Oh, absolutely. And I do acknowledge that. And I suspect Jeremy Corbyn at times has also acknowledged instances where it does go too far.
Well, he's never ever said, I don't, to my knowledge, he's never ever said that anything he has done or said has been anti-Semitic.
I don't think Jeremy Corbyn has been personally anti-Semitic. We can go through the report if you would like, and I can maybe make a better assessment of some of his actions.
Do you think that you've ever said anything or done anything which could, in the cold light of day, be reasonably interpreted as anti-Semitism?
Absolutely. For sure. Never. I mean, I'll give you an example personally. One of the things that I routinely deploy, one of the first, can go through the report if you would like, and I can maybe make a better assessment of some of his actions.
Do you think that you've ever said anything or done anything which could, in the cold light of day, be reasonably interpreted as anti-Semitism?
Absolutely, for sure. I mean, I'll give you an example personally.
I don't know if you understood the question.
One of the things that I routinely deploy, one of the pejoratives that I routinely deploy is inbred. And I use that against vulgar ethno-nationalism, vulgar fascism of all different sorts, because nationalism and fascism in general revolves around.
So these talking points, I feel like he's tightened up his propaganda significantly over the past 6 months. I don't know if he's gotten foreign training or if, I don't know how, but he's tightened it up significantly. This whole interview so far, he's done a really, really, really good job where every single statement is layered with propaganda terms. So this, like, being opposed to vulgar ethno-nationalism, to vulgar fascism, right? The state of Israel as a Jewish majority state is necessarily an ethno-nationalist state, especially with regards to Jewish people, is a vulgar ethno-nationalist state. The fascist government, Israel is a fascist government that needs to maintain its ethno-nationalism, right? Like, everything here is layered. So, like, these types of definitions, these types of ways he's describing things gives him infinite ability to be as, to say whatever he wants to about them, because he's not attacking Jews. He's attacking a vulgar ethno-nationalist state. He's attacking a fascist government.
Vulgar fascism of all different sorts, because nationalism and fascism in general revolves around ethnic purity or religious purity or some kind of racial purity, right? Mm-hmm. I think we agree. White nationalists, Christian fascists, phalangists, numerous different sorts.
Nazis,
right?
Do the Nazi
and,
one. Oh, no.
One of the things that they always bring up that I also personally identify as, like, something that could be misconstrued as me being anti-Semitic is when I called settlers in the West Bank inbred. I said these inbred settlers, and that was.
I think you compared them to the KKK as well, is that right?
Oh no, but I don't think that's anti-Semitic.
No, no, I'm not saying that's anti-Semitic, but I think I'm just giving the full context.
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I did. I've compared them to neo-Nazis. I mean, Itzma Yehudit is Itamar Ben-Gvir's party. It's literally called the Jewish Power Party. It's not like they're hiding that they have fascistic.
Do you think it might ever be
fascistic? Okay. Because in the U.S., if we were to hear anything associated to, like, power, like white power, or okay, like, we would assume that. But good word for me. Yeah.
Better sometimes just to never compare any Jews to Nazis. It might just be wise. To
oh no,
that.
No, I don't. I'm not so precious about that comparison. And I've actually had.
Maybe that's easy for you to say debates. As a non-Jewish person.
Oh, for sure. But I'm. You know,
I mean, you can call them lots of things. I'm just sort of trying to be as sort of generous as possible. Well, but you could. There are so many things you could call those settlers. I'm not defending those settlers for a moment. I think a lot of them are committing heinous acts. I think a lot of the people in the far right of the Netanyahu government are absolutely appalling. I would say that completely explicitly. But you know what? You could probably say all that, and you could probably make a stronger case and not undermine yourself by comparing them to Nazis, because Nazis literally try to exterminate who they are as Jews.
Yes, I don't disagree with that.
But the Jews do the same thing to the Palestinians.
The comparison,
why'd you do it?
In my opinion, the comparison, in my opinion, is not only graphic, but it's apt. Because Nazism is a fascist ideology. It's a dangerous fascist ideology.
Well, call them fascists. Call them fascists. You don't need to call them Nazis or neo-Nazis.
Well, but the reason why I specifically utilize the term, deploy the term Nazi, is because, well, two reasons. Number one, the goals of ethnic cleansing are identical, and especially considering that a genocide has unfolded at this point, a modern day genocide with different tools. It's not the same exact type of genocide as the Holocaust, of course, not the concentration camps, and yet it's an open air prison that has been bombarded with almost 10 atom bombs worth of explosive ordnance that my government, and as a matter of fact, your government, has aided and abetted in the process of. And from that perspective, the reason why I say I'm not so precious about this, while always maintaining the position that anti-Semitism is completely unacceptable.
Please hold on. I got my towel out. I want to come. Remember our cornerstone neo-Nazi-ish. I don't know if there's another word for it. When I think of, like, Nazism, or if I think of, like, neo-Nazis, what I think of is one of the underlying foundations of this is, like, the massive Jewish conspiracy stuff. And part of the massive Jewish conspiracy stuff is downplaying the Holocaust, or if not downplaying it, at least making you understand that the only reason why we care about the Holocaust is because Jews have to have the Holocaust as the center point in their history, in their story, because as long as they can focus on the Holocaust, they can get away with owning the banks and owning the media and owning Epstein and owning everything else, and that's why they keep bringing it back to the Holocaust over and over and over again. So neo-Nazi people will always try to yank you back to that and say, well, look, they're trying to make you feel bad about the Holocaust. Like, that's not, you know, that's not an excuse for them to own everything, okay? In fact, the Holocaust wasn't even fucking real. But I don't know if he's ever gone quite that far. Does he? We're about to see. No way, right?
The reason why I say I'm not so precious about this, while always maintaining the position that anti-Semitism is completely unacceptable, I always say I'm not precious about this because at the end of the day, it's a genocide. At the end of the day, it's an apartheid state, and Zionism as an ideology is a racist ideology, and many Jewish thinkers are now also coming to terms with that, even if they had self-identified as Zionists their entire lives. This transformation.
So you would compare what's happening in Gaza to the Holocaust?
It's not to the same extent, no, but I have compared it to the Holocaust, yes. It's no different than saying these concentration camps that we have in the United States of America are turning into death camps. Fascism is not a static concept. It's an ideology. It's a very dangerous one that I oppose unconditionally across
the... Every single thing about the West, ultimately... has to be. It sucks if I need to find like the, where's that good leftist propaganda shit? What do these guys read from to get their talking points or their propaganda thing? Because I feel like I'm catching up sometimes. So I'm trying to understand it, but it feels like basically you have the Nazis, and the Nazis are like the ultimate bad guys, and then because the Nazis are the ultimate bad guys, and because in a way you could argue they're a product of the West, maybe kind of. I don't know if you'd really say that, but sure. We have the Nazis and we have the United States and we've got Israel and we've got every possible way we can to compare the current iteration of Western states to what the Nazis did. So like Trump is a fascist and they're white nationalist and they're ethno-supremacists and Israel are fascist. I'm sorry, fascistic. And they are ethno-supremacists, ethno-nationalists. And they're all like Nazis. They're all Nazis and they're all doing genocides like Nazis do. And if you ask these people, by the way, 100,000,000%, if you ask any of them, who was the one who stopped the Nazis in World War II? All of them will say, the Brits and Americans helped a little bit, but it was like 90% Russia. It was 90% the Soviet Union. All of them will say that. It is a cornerstone of even today in Russia, of Russia's history, that they view themselves as the ones who conquered and defeated the Nazis. And we know this is not true, right? The Soviets and the Nazis were very happy to play ball with each other until, I don't know, Hitler did too much meth or something. But the feeling is that every country right now in the Western world can somehow be compared to Nazi Germany, and that's why all of them have to be ultimately destroyed in some way, which is what Hassan is pushing at. He's not going quite that far with what he says, although he will for Israel. And then it's like all of these non-US countries, we can gloss over every bad thing they've ever done. There's always like an excuse or a reason. Like when you're talking about Israelis and you're talking about Palestinians, well, why do Israelis hate Palestinians? Because they're ethno-nationalists, because they're fascistic, because they're Jewish supremacists, because they're hateful, evil, inbred, whatever. Well, why do Hamas kill Israeli civilians? Well, you have to understand that after years of oppression and after all of the horrible media and the feeling that they have about themselves and they're right across the street from the homes from where their ancestors were from, blah, 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 it's infinite excuses. It's the adult child thing. It's infinite excuses for the enemies of the West for why they act the way they do. And then it's infinite accountability in adulthood for the West for the things that they do. This framing is so fucking annoying.
The board.
But it's not the Holocaust, is it, Hassan? It's not the Holocaust.
No, no,
and to compare it to, I think the thing about you is you speak compellingly about many things, but you undermine your case and you open yourself to the accusation, which might not be unreasonable, of anti-Semitism by making these comparisons between what the Israeli government is doing, and let's be honest, Jews. And
then it's annoying because even for people that are giving like tough interviews, I don't think that I don't think they see like the meta picture. They don't understand like what's actually going on. So even in their scathing pushback, it's not really hitting like what's actually happening, you know?
Nazis and things they did in the Holocaust, because however heinous we might find what has happened in Gaza, and many of my listeners and viewers would, it is still not the same as the mass extermination and the ritualistic extermination of people which happened on a daily basis during the Holocaust. So why compare the two things?
Because I don't want it to get to the Holocaust. And this is the best part of this.
It's not just an adult child thing. It's a simpleton's version of class struggle, though. Well, so like, I think that there is, oh shit. There's like a weird thing that happens where you have like this, oh God, I'm about to get Jordan Peterson in here. You have like your like kind of like libs in the US. We'll say like libs / Democrats, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get like your progressives, okay? And then this is where you get into the real weird territory. You have like your, I don't know what you would call them, like class Marxists? So you have your progressives who, I'm sorry, you'll get these class Marxists that LARP as progressive. So when Hassan is out here and Hassan is getting really mad about, you know, why are we talking about black issues or trans issues? Like, guys, who cares? We got to focus on who the real enemies are, okay? The odors of society, right? You get these like class Marxists. But then I haven't really noticed this until like the last couple months. I don't know what you would call these people. You have these like anti-Western Marxists. And the class thing is actually not as important. I thought it was, but I don't think it is. It's people who hate the West. And I think that this was like the most clear when the support for Steyer came out. That I think if you would have asked me, I think I would have bet a considerable amount of money with odds against somebody like Steyer ever being supported by ML types like Hassan. I just would have never. There's no way. It doesn't make any sense. It's the billionaire thing is too far. Like, they'll make excuses for their millionaires and even their centimillionaires, but not their billionaires, not their Steyers. But for some reason, or not for some reason, it's the sloppulous shit, I think, underlines a lot of this, because sloppulism allows you to infinitely attack the West and undermine every single part of the West. But you have like these class-based Marxists that will sometimes LARP as progressives, but they're actually like anti-Western Marxists who sometimes will LARP as class-based Marxists, but they're really like here. They just, whatever they do, it just has to contribute to the downfall and the destruction of like the West. But I don't know why. I'm not sure. Like, I don't know if they would, like, Turkey, I'm pretty sure, is considered part of the West? Maybe? Yeah? I'm trying to think how in terms of relationship to the West, in terms of, I mean, they're obviously, it's a NATO country. Erdogan would disagree. Oh, man. Of all the Arab states, if there was a single Arab state that could be the West or part of the West, I feel like it would have to be Turkey. No? Not really, at least not in their worldview. Why do you systematically refer to Turks as Arabs? It's all the same shit to me, my brother. Sorry, Muslim majority states, whatever. They aren't secular. Don't they kind of go back and forth with that? I don't know if about Turkey society. I guess what I'm trying to think of, the only reason I say that, or what, the only thing I'm thinking of is like, I just don't know what the end goal is. Like, let's say these like Hassan types got everything they wanted and like Western states truly started to fall. Would it be that they would want them to become like subservient or to capitulate to, I don't know, Russia or China? Or is it that they would want like an actual, some kind of socialist utopia to take over and they would be the heads of that new thing? I have no idea. I don't know. Hassan explains this concept perfectly here for 5 minutes. What is this?
It actually thrived.
This is a year old.
Under liberalism. Fascism thrived under liberalism in the beginning stages of like fascism's rise to power anyway. Okay? And that exact same cycle has continued for the past 100 years. Okay? That's precisely the reason why you see even direct people that held the guns, okay, against the Jews. In places like Ukraine, for example, get standing ovations from liberals because they don't think beyond the fact that like this brave Ukrainian veteran in the Canadian Parliament was anti-socialist during World War II. Hitler lost personally, but fascism won. Okay, and that's precisely the reason why. That is precisely the reason why you're experiencing Hitlerian speech by the United States of American Congress members, by the president of the United States, the former president, and the liberals are playing the exact same fake defensive posture in this regard as they did historically back then. It is very, very frustrating. It's a one-to-one. People understand that Nazis are bad, so you can't say Nazis are good. You have to say something different. So you can't say, for example, that the Frankfurt School is causing the collapse of Germany by instilling us with Jewish mind poison. You say woke mind virus. You say cultural degeneracy. You say cultural Marxism. You don't say Judeo-Marxism, you say cultural Marxism instead. Okay, not that long ago, Christian fascists used to openly fucking state that this was a Christian nation. Now they say it's a Judeo-Christian nation, our Judeo-Christian values, okay? But that is an allegiance that is fraught, okay? It's a fraudulent allegiance. It will end up hurting Jewish people as well, okay? Cultural Bolshevism turned into cultural Marxism. This is something that I used to talk about with respect to Jordan Peterson all the goddamn time, a person who presented himself.
Here's like the thing that I'm trying to think if I've missed it. It's so scary once you start to like see big narratives like this, because you can start to get super fucking or what this guy in chat just said. Do you ever think you're intellectualizing these people's beliefs? To make sure that I'm not falling into some bullshit hole, I usually try to like, I have a frame of analysis. I try to make predictions based on that frame of analysis. If the predictions start to fail, then I'll start to change my analysis. So like I said before, I didn't believe, I would have said that like the class stuff was the most important stuff, but the Steyer stuff has to change the way that I view it a little bit. I try to always be open to new information. One thing that I feel like just was never true of the right, despite how much the left people, including me, pushed it. I don't think I pushed this, is the right never really was this coherent when it came to pushing for this like fascist type stuff. Like, I don't think that Jordan Peterson was a fascist. I think he got bullied a lot and then changed his political beliefs and then just started falling into retard rabbit holes. And the reason why I feel that, though, is because I don't see the, like, if it was the case that all of these people were as ideologically driven along some political program the same way that Hassan was, it would be over. Like, it would be over. Look at the Trump, all the Republicans in power, the media power that all these people have. Like, they would be pushing us towards some fascist hellhole, like, immediately. It would just be completely over. But it's not. It is unbelievable incompetence all the way to the top. It is insane how stupid and uncoordinated and ridiculous these people are. Now, that's not to say, like, if the government was more Stephen Miller types, then I would agree. But I just don't think it has been, at least not in the United States. Not to say that people aren't trying, but yeah.
Ugh. So I was a liberal for years and years and years, right? When it was very obvious that he was a fucking fascist.
Wait, who's he talking about here?
It will end up hurting Jewish people as well, okay? Cultural Bolshevism turned into cultural Marxism. This is something that I used to talk about with respect to Jordan Peterson all the goddamn time, a person who presented himself as a liberal for years and years and years, right? When it was very obvious that he was a fucking fascist.
Oh. No, like, I think if you watch Jordan Peterson's old stuff, I don't think he was a fascist. I don't think that's fair to say. It's impossible when you look at his old stuff to say that. I just never saw any inkling or anything of that. I think that especially because liberals fall into this stupid fucking liberal trap of, like, especially in America, the freedom of speech shit. They just have no defense against it. Liberals just aren't prepared to deal with people with actual radical ideologies. They can't deal with them. And maybe it's because they haven't appeared. Like, we can deal with them in another country. It's easy to fight the Nazis because the Nazis are German. It's a different country. We can fight that. It's a foreign power. But as part of our own country, it becomes so much more difficult to deal with. I had a back and forth with this motherfucker earlier, and I hate these people more than the Hassan types, okay? And I don't even like, the thing that I hate the most about this guy is that I can't even really super hate him, okay? But this guy tweets out, he's not even a big account. He's like a random nobody, I think. I'm not trying to lilbro or anything. I'm just saying he's not I shouldn't even really be fighting with him. But these people are the most annoying people to fight through. This happened on Brad's show, Brad Palumbo, with the other guy. Something Destiny and Fuentes have in common is obsessive focus on other streamers. Hassan this, Sneeko that. Their lives are consumed with petty betrayals, rivalries, and never-ending psychosexual dramas. I am less bullish than I used to be on streamers as political organizers. So I see him and I quote tweet, LeMayo, the world will be so much better when algos stop feeding politics slop to everyone so these unserious people can go back to just watching Joe Rogan all day. Okay. And then he gives me a reply. So what I'm basically saying is that, like, there are so many fucking drama slopper consumers in the politics world now. This is what politics has become, basically. I don't really say it clearly here, but he replies and he says, I hold a mirror up to you all and none of you like what you see. So my response is, I have no problem with the amount of research I put into debating any of these positions. People like Hassan will spend zero time doing any research and exclusively deal in petty personal attacks, which he basically does. Like, if you watch Hassan and you see the problems he has with other people, they're almost always some form of personal attack, or at least some form of, like, unfactual, ideologically related attack. So if he sees somebody, he'll be like, oh, isn't that the guy who supports Israel and takes AIPAC money? This is not real politics. Or it's not, we're not, like, actually dealing in high-level political analysis and attacking people's ideas or whatever the fuck. We're just trying to web people into being pro-Israel or whatever, right? That's what he's done for, like, the past 2 years, you know? And then my reply is, people like Hassan spend zero time doing any research and exclusively deal on petty personal attacks. And then idiots like you watching in the middle just assume, oh, it must be everyone, which only really benefits the person who does no work themselves. In this case, idiots like Hassan. Because when you think everybody's retarded, it is the retard that wins, right? If a retard can go into a room with nine other people and then convince somebody on the outside that everybody in the room is retarded, the retard's the one who benefits the most.
They're not retarded anymore.
Exactly. Why are you defending yourself from the claim that you limit your influence by focusing too much on streamer drama, by saying that Hassan does less research than you? I know he does less research than you, but it has nothing to do with the claim I made. There's always this, like, feeling from these middle people, from these libs, that, like, if you were just above it all, then it wouldn't affect you. And it's like, brother, I wish it worked that way. Because I'm forced to respond to drama claims when other people are making them. If Hassan is constantly laundering Kiwi Farms and Snarker opinions about me to his audience, and then if they carry these opinions to other parts of the internet, I have to deal with, I have to respond to and deal with them. The entire online political space has been destroyed by low information, ideologically motivated politics streamers who waste everyone's time by trashing the place with drama slop since they can't contend on factual grounds. Well, maybe this is just the swamp you swim in, and there's no getting out. Seems unlikely to me. There are a lot of YouTube political commentators who are involved in essentially zero personal drama. But supposing it for argument's sake, yeah, but like, these are people who basically can't push back against far-left people, right? So if you think about like the Brian Tyler Cohens, the Adam Mocklers, and I appreciate them and I love them, but these guys can never, ever, ever push against the left. And they don't, at least that much. I don't really ever see them push against like the Marxist types.
Or they just choose not to.
They choose not to. But if they were to start to do it, they would start to get the personal attacks. Absolutely.
Which isn't worth it for them, yeah?
Yeah, and so it's easier for them to just hit right. But then these Marxist people can grow to the left, and then nobody ever contends with them or does anything with them. But if so, then I'm still right that it puts a ceiling on your political influence. This is all of politics today. Look at the White House right now. It comes down straight from the top. I don't know why I'm wasting time with this engagement. And then I think I quote tweet this, and then I'm about to make the point on my Twitter that I'm kind of making with regards to this for the libs. The most annoying people on the planet aren't even the propagandists. It's all of these I'm so above it idiots that swim in the middle and fall for the slop. Person A engages in nonstop drama slop all day, meaning person B is forced to respond. Otherwise, crazy statements and allegations will permeate the entire media ecosystem they exist in. Person B responds to person A, and then all of a sudden you get these midwit person Cs, in this case Steady Drumbeat, who wade into the mess and immediately both sides the entire situation, not realizing that if person B stops responding, person A wins the narrative, whereas if person A were to stop, the entire media ecosystem could go back to being about actual news and facts, and not the drama slop that person A condemns us to exist in. I have no idea how to deal with these person Cs that come in both sides every single thing. It's always the same brain dead responses that refuse to engage with the reality of the ecosystem. I don't know. I'm being honest here. I don't know how to engage with these lines. I've never found a good response to them. And it's so frustrating because it's just people who don't understand the ecosystem. Oh, so just because they act bad, you have to act bad? Well, why can't you just be better than them? Why do you let them dictate how you act? Well, aren't both of you contributing to it? Well, why would he stop when you do the same thing? And it's just like, true. Okay. Anyway.
This is a reach. It's a reach for you because you don't understand history. You don't understand anything, really. It is not a fucking reach at all. Every single thing that I said in terms of like the American and Western powers, but specifically the Western world under the Marshall Plan and under NATO, straight the fuck up implemented, straight the fuck up put fascists in positions of prominence, positions of power. In West Germany, they directly...
Do Operation Paperclip, do that one, please.
Re-Hitlerize the country.
What? I didn't even know the talking point for this.
Straight the fuck up, put fascists in positions of prominence, positions of power. In West Germany, they directly re-Hitlerized the country. That's 100% correct. Like, that is literally what happened. Okay? That is exactly what happened. Like, you can consider that a reach, but the unfortunate reality for you is that you are no different than the Republicans that you think you're smarter than. Okay? They deny reality about, like,
West Germany's re-Hitlerized. So I haven't heard that talking point before, but there are people that will tell you that East Germany was better than West Germany, that it actually was a better place to live. Or if it wasn't at times, it was just because the West was oppressing it somehow. There are people, I mean, we've watched some of these videos that tell you that North Korea is actually a pretty sick place to live, despite the fact that they're sanctioned so heavily by the West and they have trouble getting stuff in because of the West, but it's actually nowhere near as bad as people say it is. Like, yes, people have these opinions, yeah.
Reality that is in front of them, you deny reality throughout history and also subsequently the reality that's in front of you. If you don't recognize that these guys are the exact same type of fascists, but with like different language and sometimes not different language at all, as a matter of fact. Okay. East Germany, not West. The West is still normal. No, dog. I'm talking about West Germany. West Germany was directly ruled by the same fucking Nazis. Okay. I'm talking about the Cold War. And
after World War II, a lot of Nazis got back into their positions, their previous positions, because there were not enough people to replace them, like administrative work. Oh, sure. Okay. I don't know if that counts as re-Nazification. I feel like Germany's done a pretty good job at not re-Nazifying, but.
What are the consequences? What are the consequences of the collapse of the USSR? What are the consequences of East Germany and West Germany fucking unifying? Okay, underserved, underprivileged communities that
like him quoting Putin, and it's funny too because he says it here. He just made a comparison about this, like quoting Hitler. Oh no, it was here. He mentioned like how bad quoting Hitler was, and it's why they do it. But he'll quote Putin when he says, when he was at Oxford, he said this. Was it tragedy or catastrophe? Putin has this quote that he said for, I think, over a decade.
The fall of the USSR was one of the greatest catastrophes of the 20th century. Just wait. Listen. Maybe you'll agree.
But this is like, this is verbatim, decades old. This is a Putin quote. This was in April of 2005. Russian President Vladimir Putin told the nation Monday that the collapse of the Soviet Empire was the greatest geopolitical catastrophe of the century and had fostered separatist movements inside Russia. And this is a position that Putin still holds to this day.
That we're in a state of disrepair that didn't get the fucking Marshall Plan dollars, that then also did not get developed adequately. And the horrifying circumstances that East Germany was subjected to post the USSR collapse is exactly why so many fucking poor Germans in East Germany are AfD supporters. Okay, there is no difference between those guys voting for AfD than the Springfield, Ohio white guys who might have been lifelong Democrats turning into fucking Hitlerian fascists there. That's it.
It's like, so the Soviet side of East Germany now became Nazis because the reunification happened and the Western side, who, well, I mean, I guess they all used to be Nazis, were not supporting the Eastern side enough with liberal tax dollars. I don't even know how true those claims are. My guess is these are greatly exaggerated. But so then they had to become Nazis. It's just like somebody said, Destiny, they did not get Marshall Plan dollars because their leadership rejected it. Yeah, I don't know the details of the for reunification of Marshall dollar plans, but Marshall Plan dollars. But why are you cutting off Hassan's reasoning here? Just plainly saying the same thing does not mean you mean the same thing. I'm sorry. Let's listen to what he says afterwards.
The fall of the USSR was one of the greatest catastrophes of the 20th century. Just wait, listen, maybe you'll agree. Not only was there incalculable harm done to every single country under its banner, child prostitution, skyrocketing suicide rates, life expectancy plummeting, but America was no longer contested around the globe.
So, with that, America no longer contested, by the way, is a dog whistle for the word multipolar. Every single time you hear a person say multipolar, what they're saying is they want the West to fall. That's a non-debatable point. If anybody wants to seriously contend that, they also are a tanky or ML or a retard who shouldn't even be in the conversation. But that's what multipolar means. But the lack of contesting of America, the Western world, without Russia, nobody can hold the evil America at bay.
And it is precisely because of the end to that multipolarity that we saw accelerated neoliberalism that is devastating every Western nation right now. Unlimited and unchecked greed. Our successes are leading to our own demise and the demise and collapse of the liberal system. The U.S. has produced disaster after disaster after disaster.
Crazy that none of those ex-states wanted to go back to the Soviet Union after the collapse of the Soviet Union. Crazy that none of them were clamoring to rejoin Russia. And the only way Russia has been able to bring anybody back into the fold is through military conquest, huh?
What? Timestamp Hitler's speech? What?
Okay. Anyway.
Happened on a daily basis during the Holocaust. So why compare the two things?
Because I don't want it to get to the Holocaust. And this is the best part of this conversation.
Would. It is still not the same as the mass extermination and the ritualistic extermination of people which happened on a daily basis during the Holocaust. So why compare the two things?
Because I don't want it to get to the Holocaust. And this is the best part of this conversation. And I love having this conversation because Holocaust studies are profoundly important. But they're not profoundly important so that we can understand what took place and then assume that it's never going to happen again.
It's so that we can prevent it from happening in the future, like what's happening in Israel.
The entire point of genocide scholarship and specifically scholarship surrounding the Holocaust is so that we understand exactly how society can move in that direction and how so many otherwise kind people, I assume, can turn a blind eye to the atrocities that are unfolding so that we understand what took place and never allow it to happen again. So my point is, I think the final solution for Israel has not been achieved yet, right? But this would be not dissimilar to, I guess, a communist or a socialist in Nazi Germany before the final solution, pointing to the Armenian genocide.
Given the military capabilities,
Stop lagging, YouTube. Shut up. Build your Legos.
And exactly how society can move in that direction and how people, how so many otherwise kind people, I assume, can turn a blind eye to the atrocities that are unfolding so that we understand what took place and never allow it to happen again. So my point is, I think the final solution for Israel has not been achieved yet, right?
It's, I don't know how they got away with adopting this language also. Vosh did this too at the end of a stream. I heard him say it. That's crazy to me. And it's not on accident, but okay.
But this would be not dissimilar to, I guess.
Wait, what do you mean? What language?
Final solution for Israel?
Oh.
Initially, I don't think that Hitler initially was planning on killing every Jew. I don't know if it was because he thought he couldn't or because he just didn't care. He just wanted them gone. But initially, they were exporting Jews everywhere out of like their ghettos and into concentration camps and everything. But then at some point, the idea was like, well, what do we have to actually do with them? Okay, it's not enough to put them in camps. It's not enough to move them around. Like the final solution to the Jewish question. And I think the JQ, the Jewish question, I believe in Nazi Germany was like, everybody knows these Jews are going around everywhere and they all have their own interests and they're all fucking society over. So what do we do about them? That's like the JQ, the Jewish question. What do we do with these motherfuckers? And then the final solution is we kill them all. So for him to say like, we haven't figured out the final solution for Israel yet, that's a little bit of a, that's kind of crazy.
It's like a dog whistle. Yeah.
He means that Israel will carry out, not the final solution against Israel. Maybe. I thought that initially when I first heard him say it, but then when I replayed it, I don't know. I don't know. I can't tell.
Understand exactly how society can move in that direction and how so many otherwise kind people, I assume, can turn a blind eye to the atrocities that are unfolding so that we understand what took place and never allow it to happen again. So my point is, I think the final solution for Israel has not been achieved yet, right? But this would be not dissimilar to, I guess, a communist or a socialist in Nazi Germany before the final solution, pointing to the Armenian genocide.
Even Israel has
I'm not sure. I can't tell. I don't know. He might have meant it that way, but I mean, even still, attaching it at all is kind of weird. But
the Israelis, given the military capabilities that Israel has, if they wanted to commit a Holocaust against Palestinians, they could do so.
Oh, but now we always have to. How do we account for this? Well, because they could genocide them, but they can't genocide them too much. Because if they genocide them too much, then the West will know. So they only can genocide them a little bit, but not. And it's like, ugh, I don't know.
They haven't done so. They may have acted in a way that is dehumanizing. In fact, they have. They may have acted in a way without proper regard for Palestinian life. I think they have. Lots of people would agree that they have. But to compare it to the Holocaust,
it's a disagreement that we have.
Regard for Palestinian life. I think they have. Lots of people would agree that they have. But to compare it to the Holocaust,
the disagreement that we have is not that.
My suggestion to you would be that it is crass and offensive to.
Are they? Was there editing fuck-ups here?
In a way, without proper regard for Palestinian life, I think they have. Lots of people would agree that they have. But to compare it to the Holocaust...
The disagreement that we have is not that...
My suggestion to you would be that it is crass and offensive to compare the only Jewish state in the world. And we should, of course, be careful of eliding Israel and Judaism, of course, but it is the only Jewish state in the world.
Why did he use that term? Well, if he's talking about Israel's final solution, what he means is that... Because you always have to compare Israel to the Nazis. So he's just saying that Israel is on the path to... the final solution to the Palestinians, which is killing them all, basically. That would be how he means it there.
Rise of Jews. Compare.
But I might be a little bit primed because of that.
Yeah, guess I'll add that.
That Vosh clip was crazy.
Segment. Back to dying over it over. Well, much like we haven't quite found a solution to the Zionist problem, fucking infecting Western governments, we also haven't found a solution to this goddamn room.
The solution to the Zionist problem, infecting the West. That's almost like one. That's almost one to one lifted from.
Wild.
Yeah, from the Jews infecting the West. I think infection, viewing like immigrants and everything is like infectious to Western society and everything is kind of like a Nazi talking about, but whatever. Okay. Anyway.
Comparing them to Nazis, given that Nazis literally tried to exterminate this entire race and came very close to succeeding. You don't need to do that. You shouldn't do it. And it's crassly and grossly offensive for you to do so.
Yeah, I don't mind coming across as vulgar or offensive in this regard and maybe even hurting some people's feelings, because at the end of the day, the analysis here from my end is there is a genocide that has taken place and it's continuing to a certain degree. I mean, even in the process of this so-called ceasefire, Israel has also killed
It's annoying that they let Hassan get away with this, because the guy is kind of pushing on like an optics thing. He's saying, optically, Hassan, you have to understand this is terrible. And then Hassan is fighting on his level of like, well, you know, optically, I'm willing to bite the bullet here and take this. But that's not actually what's happening. Optically, this is intentional, right? And the intentionality, I think, is one of two purposes. I don't know which one primarily, but it could be both equally. One is the constant comparison of Nazis to anything in the West. So Israel, Nazi, America, Nazi, everything in the Western world, Nazi. First world is all Nazi. But then the second thing is to kind of like rob Jews in general, I guess, of their Holocaust or Nazi talking points. Like, wow, you guys think the Holocaust was bad? You're doing a Holocaust. Wow, you guys think the Nazis were bad? you guys are the real Nazis. Like that, the it's twofold here. The language and the use of the language is very, very, very intentional.
Approximately 4,000 people in Lebanon. The expansion in the Greater Israel Project is continuing. So the ideology is still unimpeded place, and it's continuing to a certain degree. I mean, even in the process of this so-called ceasefire, Israel has also killed approximately 4,000 people in Lebanon. The expansion in the Greater Israel Project is continuing. So the ideology is still unimpeded. The guiding principle is still unimpeded. And therefore, I find that to be far more offensive than the language that I'm using, especially considering that I think at this stage there are a lot of people who want to maybe hold on to some kind of defense of Israel because they understand it to be, like you just said, the
holy fucking shit, that's true as fuck. Also, that's a mega abuser, like, phrase. Be careful if a partner ever says that to you. Flip Orange and Chat said, Destiny, it's low-key the you're acting like your ex of geopolitics. Yes. Careful. When you hear that one, you're acting just like you said your ex did or whatever. Whew, careful.
Maybe hold on to some kind of defense of Israel because they understand it to be, like you just said, the Jewish nation, the only Jewish nation. I have been unbelievably critical of Saudi Arabia and every other country that has participated in the blockade of Yemen, for example. The United Arab Emirates and Saudi Arabia did that with our weapons.
Oh, actually, wait, fuck me. How did I block that off from my mind? When I was saying what's the most Western state or whatever of all the Arab or Muslim states or whatever, and I said Turkey, it actually would probably be Saudi Arabia. Although it's weird because, like, we support the monarchy. I don't really know where the people are at as much in Saudi Arabia. But Saudi Arabia is definitely the one that people feel are more U.S. aligned and representing U.S. interests and everything else. Yeah.
So once again,
the other reason that other people might say that it's offensive, well, deeply offensive compared to the Nazis.
Hassan routinely calls Saudis genocidal. Yes. These guys will hate a lot of the Gulf states. Fucking hate a lot of the Gulf states.
Emirates and Saudi Arabia did that with our weapons once again.
The other reason that other people might say that it's offensive or deeply offensive compared to the Nazis is however disproportionate we might think the Israeli government has been in the reaction to October the 7th, and I would agree with you that it has been disproportionate and in many cases appalling. October the 7th did happen. 1,300 Jews were killed in the most horrendous, heinous way that we might imagine. It was a pogrom. There is a major security problem for the state of Israel with Hamas and with Hezbollah. They do have to protect their own citizens and their own people. And to compare that to the Nazis weren't provoked by Jews into the Holocaust. There was no security problem for the Nazis. And so to combine...
Well, we laying on the... We have a Finkelstein comparison here that Finkel fuck usually pulls out, and it's the...
What about the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising?
And compare and allied those things is just offensive and wrong. It's just
when he talks to Americans, he'll say, what about the Nate Turner rebellion?
Crazy.
No, your analysis is actually ahistorical and unfortunately categorically false. Of course the Nazis lied about not only Jews, but socialists, communists, trade unionists alike.
They were never attacked by Jews.
They presented an argument as to why they must do this, why they must depose and take care of all of these nefarious elements within German society broadly, while they were also carrying out the greater Germany project for living room purposes, right? Not.
I'm trying to think if I've ever heard that terminology before. The greater Germany project. There was a concept that Hitler and I think other fascists, even non-Nazi parties, talked about. What's the name for it? Libenlearn? I think when peace goes on there all the time. Just kidding. Lebensraum. The idea that the German people were going to be so great and that they were entitled to a vast living space is what it stood for across Europe. So that's why they conquer more and more territory. I don't know if I've ever heard that described as, or is it living room? Living room, living space. But like space to live, not room like a living room. But I don't know. I don't know if I've ever heard that referred to as like the greater Germany project. And I wonder if he's using that word or that phrase because people like to refer to like the greater Israel project. And it's another like parallel that they can draw here. The Greater Israel Project is like the Greater Germany Project. That's cute.
While they were also carrying out the Greater Germany Project for living room purposes, right? Not dissimilar to the Israeli Zionist expansion. But the point is, do you agree with the propaganda or the arguments? Do I agree with the Nazi argument that
October 7th wasn't propaganda? It happened.
Of course not. I don't agree with the notion that Palestinians, the indigenous population predating 1948, could not potentially live alongside migrant Jews that were coming in, specifically as a
what about Hamas? What about living next to Hamas, an organization which is dedicated to the destruction of Israel?
I'm going to get to Hamas as well. So the reason why I brought that up is because this has been a racist ideology since 1948 or even prior to 1948 that has had a lot of opposition from Jews as well. I'm going to get to Hamas as well. So the reason why I brought
he has to be getting there has to be some kind of foreign training here. I feel like his propaganda has like ramped up so much. This whole thing is so thick. And this is in an adversarial interview as well. So it's like fairly impressive that he's able to weave so many propaganda points into his answers here in an adversarial interview, because it is. What if he got programmed in China or something? Damn.
Brought that up is because this has been a racist ideology since 1948 or even prior to 1948 that has had a lot of opposition from Jews as well. The only member of the British Parliament that opposed the Balfour Declaration was, you know, a Jewish member of Parliament who thought that this was simply to try and this initiative was being implemented.
He picked up his Balfour Declaration point. That's good.
Exclusively to depose the Jews, to deport Jews from British soil. So throughout this entire history,
this is like kind of true, but it doesn't matter. Like, Jews were fine with that. Part of in a Jewish nation. Is it Theodor Herzl? Why does Theodor not sound like the right first name? The Herzl guy, who is considered, I think, like the founder of like modern secular Zionism, labor Zionism, to push Jews to finally leave. But he died in like 1908 or something. When he was talking about Jews leaving Europe, he was very open for like, this would be really great, and we can make good arguments for why we should be allowed to move to another country, because everybody here fucking hates us anyway. So the Christians will be happy because we'll give them like half our shit or whatever, and we'll be fucking gone, and they won't have to deal with us anymore. And then we'll be happy because we'll be in another area, and we won't have to worry about them anymore. Like, Jewish people were very open to this. They were pretty pragmatic. They weren't retarded. Like, oh, the Europeans want us to be happy and move and live and exist in some other place. They were like, we can be gone, the Europeans will be happy, and we'll be happy.
Of Israel and Palestine, this conflict gets reduced to an ethnic conflict or a religious conflict. It's not true. It's simply settler colonial expansion. And of course, there's going to be militant opposition towards that. And that militant opposition is, of course, going to evolve over time. So the idea...
But we are where we are, aren't we?
How can...
We're not in 1948. And so therefore, Israel has got to find a way to live alongside the Palestinian people. You and I, I'm sure, would both agree to say that their actions have not exactly contributed to that principle or idea in recent years. But they do have to deal with Hamas. And how do they deal with Hamas, which is literally predicated... You say that Israel is racist, it's based on a racist idea. Hamas is deeply racist. They're anti-Jewish.
No, I don't think so.
You don't think?
I disagree with
that. Well,
he just disagrees.
So many Jews, I imagine there wasn't a real need for a state until Hitler really, really proved that shit was crazy. No, there was a lot of anti-Semitism throughout all of Europe for a long, 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 long time. It was the Holocaust was basically like, Jews were arguing for a long time that they needed to go to another place, and then other Jews, I think it was a minority of Jews at this point, because once they made, I wish I could remember the structures more and everything, it was like Keisman and him and one other big Jew guy, they had like their Jewish national conferences where they'd all go and like eat donuts and talk with each other about the problems of Jews and what we got to do to fucking fix our shit. But I think at that point, most Jews were kind of convinced like, yeah, shit is pretty fucked. There might have been a few Jews who were like, well, maybe we can like still exist here. Like, it won't be that bad. And then the Holocaust was kind of like the ultimate, like, yeah, like we said, shit is kind of fucked. Like, we got to bounce. We got to get the fuck out of here. But anti-Semitism was not invented by Nazis. All right.
The Hamas charter contains references to fighting Jews as a religious duty, conspiracy claims about Jews controlling the media, finance, revolutions and wars, citations of anti-Semitic forgery and the protocols of the Elders of Zion, and a notorious hadith about Muslim fighting and killing Jews before Judgment Day.
So you're referencing the 1988 charter, which has been updated since 2017, but it doesn't really matter because the point of the
Hamas
charter
likes Jews.
Or their opinions, but... do I think Hamas likes Jews? I think that there are definitely anti-Semitic people in Palestinian society as there are.
Oh my God, it's such a funny little quirky reframing here.
Are in British society,
Dan,
right?
Dan actually does a perfect Hassan fucking impression.
Wait, what?
Yeah, you know, Dan does a perfect Hassan impression. He's like, yeah, you know, I think there's anti-Semitic people everywhere.
Oh, yeah.
When he's asking him specifically about Hamas.
People
in British society killing Jews on a regular basis.
It's because there is no real occupation. There's no military occupation of England. If there was a military occupation of England by a foreign body, by an alien force, then I'm pretty sure you would probably rise up in arms as well. And this is not just a principle that, you know, I'm coming up with as a campist or someone who opposes imperialism. It's not pure idealism.
People in chat keep putting this term in, and I don't know what it actually means. And it's not just purpose. I don't know anything about campism, or I haven't read anything or researched anything about like campism, what that means. So maybe that'll be my next little foray into Marxist ideology or whatever.
This is something that former heads of Shin Bet have also acknowledged personally. I mean, this is something that former heads of the Israeli state have acknowledged, saying, if I was on the other side of this boundary, I would become a terrorist as well. And it's perfectly understandable that people would oppose 80 years of militant occupation, militant racist occupation, humiliation and subjugation. And to go back to the point that you were making about, like, there was no resistance from Jewish partisans, this is also not true. Jewish partisans engaged in incredibly honest and incredibly moral acts of violence that was necessary at the time against key Nazi officials, including an uprising known as the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Yes. And that was perfectly valid.
There's the Finkelstein thing. The Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Fuck, can I find that? It was like, I want to say, am I exaggerating? It was like 30,000 or 15,000 Jews were like, we're going to have a last stand fight against the Nazis and it's going to be fucking epic. And I think they killed one and they were all killed. It was like...
Wait, they killed one Nazi?
I think they got one. It was completely... I'll look it up. It was just like, maybe I'm exaggerating on both sides here though. Hold on, let's see. Okay, I'm exaggerating a bit. It was about a dozen killed on the January part, April uprising, German figures. Was it 16 killed altogether? Or is that including these? And then on the Jewish side, it was 56,000 killed or captured, of which approximately 36,000 were deported to extermination camps. This was like, it was not even close. Finkelstein leans on this. That's why I knew he would bring it up. Finkelstein leans on this Warsaw Ghetto Uprising comparison so much. First of all, I think by 1942, there were already, I think, death camps in place. This was just not even... So it was 56,000 Jews were killed or captured compared to 110 Germans were injured, which includes 16 killed. It was just not even fucking close. Like, did they kill any civilians? I don't believe so. Because I think they were just... Weren't they fighting... it was incoming when Nazis were coming to empty out the place, or they were already under like Nazi occupation or control. I don't think they killed any German citizens. I don't know if Hassan is smart enough to dump this because it's bad if you know the comparison, but there, Finkelstein also likes to talk about this thing called the Nate Turner Rebellion or Nate Turner's Rebellion. This one is like this is one of those ones where it's like, I get it, but like, oof. Because I'm pretty sure for this one, this was a slave rebellion that happened in the U.S. in Virginia. They did kill civilians. I think they just ran through white people's homes. Oh, not Nate. I'm sorry, Nat Turner. I think they just ran through white people's homes and they just fucking killed anybody. but like, I get it. Slavery is pretty fucking uniquely horrible in the United States. The way that they, you know, chattel slavery, rest of your life, rest of your children's life, like pretty bad. But this was like, we're fucking killing them whites. Let's fucking go. So I get it, you know.
Key Nazi officials, including an uprising known as the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising. Yes. And that was perfectly valid. It was perfectly morally just, even though there were heinous acts of violence that took place. Mm-hmm. History is riddled with...
That's a fucking lie. Or at least I've never heard of that before in the limited research I've done. I don't know if anybody is aware of more of that. I've never heard that before, that in the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising, that Jewish people were committing heinous acts of violence, unless he's just referring to killing Nazis or whatever. I'm not sure.
Valid. It was perfectly morally just, even though there were heinous acts of violence that took place. Mm-hmm. History is riddled with colonial occupants and even slaves, for example.
You've been reported as saying
in chattel slavery, engaging in heinous acts of violence that we would oppose at the time that ultimately lead to liberation. And once the dust is settled, we look back. We would just, even though there were heinous acts of violence that took place. Mm-hmm. History is riddled with colonial occupants and even slaves, for example.
You've been reported as saying
in chattel slavery. Engaging in heinous acts of violence that we would oppose at the time that ultimately lead to liberation.
But they didn't really. Not to take away from this, but like generally violent uprisings don't usually lead to liberation, unless it's like an entire country or something. I'm not aware of much success that like oppressed minorities have had using violence to win their cause at the end of the day. I'm sure there might be a few examples, but generally it's like state on state stuff. Like another country is going to either be breaking out or like the revolution or rebellion of an entire country. For like the United States, I guess. People are saying Haiti is like the only example. Okay.
And once the dust is settled, we look back.
What does liberation look like? What does liberation look like? Is it the Israeli state collapsing?
One state, one person, one vote.
What does it look like?
Great question. So from my perspective, and I'm not Palestinian, right? So I think ultimately this is something that is that should be left to the people that are being occupied. To come to terms with. But from my estimation, I agree with the likes of Avi Shlaim, famous Iraqi Jewish Israeli historian, that a abolition of the apartheid state that currently exists and the end of the occupation must take place. Some people believe in a binational commitment. I think that's perfectly valid. Some people claim that a two-state is viable. I don't necessarily believe that.
The two-state used to be the kind of like the peace man's talking point, definitely pre-2000. From what I'd heard or seen, definitely pre-October 7th. But now, for all of the weirdo campus, I guess, for all of the anti-Western people, two-state solution is a talking point that only, you know, apartheid Jewish ethno-supremacists parrot. They don't like the two-state solution. It has to be the total destruction of the Jewish state, which is accomplished through this equal opportunity elimination of apartheid, because that means that every single person has the opportunity to have one vote. But it also means that all of the surrounding states that are hosting it's like 7 or 8 million Palestinian refugees, allow them to come back to Israel, so that there would be about 7 million Jewish people in Israel. And then there would be about, 2 million Palestinian Israelis, 2 million Gazans, 3 million West Bank Arabs. Is that 7 plus the surrounding? It's like 14 million. Is it like 14 or 15 million Palestinians and like 7 million Jews? They would be a one-third minority, basically, to this new state that's created. And that's always the goal. And then with a minority of Jewish people, whoo! A minority of Jewish people, we can fucking go wild.
A two-state with the 67 boundaries is viable because of the fact that since the so-called peace process since the 90s, Israel has deliberately extended the settlement operations in the West Bank, and now the number of Jewish
settlers
that are
something the Israeli government have long wanted, and for understandable reasons, is that Hamas would de-arm, would demilitarize as an exchange for any deal. Do you think that would be a reasonable request that Hamas would lay down their weapons?
Like this guy, unfortunately, I just don't know much about him, but he just doesn't know much about any. This is kind of a meaningless question. Like, I don't know how Hassan will answer, but Hassan could say, yeah, sure, they can demilitarize, but it's because it's going to be a new single state where they're all just going to share one military or one country and one police force anyway, so you wouldn't necessarily need Hamas. Other than that, though, there can be no demilitarization of the neighboring countries because Israel's the only one that's been super violent.
I think that it's perfectly reasonable for a two-state solution, if that's what the suggestion is, a two-state solution where one of the two states is still going to have a standing military. Will that be Hamas as a political organization, or will that be the Palestinian National Forces? I do not know. But ultimately, of course, if there is a sovereign state, a sovereign Palestinian state, of course they're going to have a standing military. It doesn't have to be Hamas. I'm not married to the idea. I don't necessarily care. To me, Hamas is simply one of the many different Palestinian resistance groups that has existed throughout time. I don't agree with their domestic policies, but I feel like that is utterly
domestic policies.
I don't agree with their domestic policies, but I feel like that is utterly immaterial because the conversation that we're having is about ending the occupation, and Hamas ultimately wants to end the occupation. Hamas would never exist and certainly would not be as violent as it has been if there hadn't been, you know, 80 years of occupation prior. Hamas, we were talking about
children, adult. Remember, they have to be that violent. The Jews are violent for literally no reason. They're just evil, terrible people. But for Hamas, they have to be. They're children. They have to be. They have to respond in a semi-predictable way to the environment around them.
The charter in 1988, that charter was written when Hamas wasn't even an actual political organization, but a Muslim Brotherhood cutout that was an Islamic charity that was even getting funds from the Israeli government, as a matter of fact.
I'm thinking about the reasons why it might be that the Home Office has banned you. And I certainly, for the record, by the way, I don't think you...
This conversation is probably part of it, don't you think?
Well, that's what I want to discuss. And for the record, I'll tweet out this week. I think it's ridiculous that you've been banned. I think that, you know, and so on. But let's think about the Home Office is justification, what it might be. I mean, is it true that you said that you considered Hamas to be 1,000 times better than Israel, and you'd vote for Hamas over Israel?
Well, just look at the death count, bro.
Every single time. Is that true, and do you stand by it?
Yeah, I do.
That's despite the fact that Hamas was responsible for October the 7th and a pogrom against Jewish people. You said you'd vote for them 1,000 times over the democratic state of Israel.
People. It wasn't a pogrom against Jewish people. Were there atrocities and war crimes?
You don't think that there was any anti-Semitism involved in it?
Absolutely.
This is where you go wrong, Hassan. You find yourself basically in a position defending elements of this.
Why I'm wrong.
I'm telling you why you're wrong, because you're honestly saying you saw Jewish people, overwhelmingly Jewish people killed that day. It was a pogrom. Mm-hmm. It was the biggest pogrom of Jews that we've seen, against Jews that we've seen since the end of the Second World War. Why do you find yourself in a position where you're like, okay, I'm actually going to defend that principle, or I'm going to defend the argument about that? Why? You just undermine yourself.
Great question. I actually gave an interview to the Times UK on this as well, and I'll explain exactly why.
Please.
So October 7th was
bad,
traumatic. There were heinous acts of violence that took place. No doubt about it.
From who? I don't know where the current talking points are on this, but it used to be that, like, well, it wasn't just Hamas. There were a lot of ordinary Palestinians that came over. So, you know, it might have been bad apples or bad people, but it doesn't represent all Palestinians. And then the second thing is always Hannibal directive. Half the people that were killed that were Jews were probably killed by the Israeli military because they didn't want them to be captured as hostages.
I would never disagree with that assessment. What I will disagree with, however, is the intentionality. The idea that October 7 was done specifically to kill as many Jewish people as possible, I think, is incorrect. I think the ultimate goal of the Palestinian resistance, whether we agree with their methods or
it's not perfect
tactics or not, and I certainly have my disagreements. The ultimate goal of the Palestinian
disagreements.
Resistance
they kill 1,300 people and rape people.
Of course, of
kill
course,
innocent I'm young saying, people at music
halls. But the ultimate goal is to make the occupation as costly as possible because the extended 80-year or at
it's fine, bro. You can support it, but that's it. They're doing a terrorism. Just say that at least, right? That's a terrorism, right? Like
time 75-year occupation had done October 7's.
So the ends justify the means, do they? The ends justify the means. If I can compare it to something
not.
In the
and
UK, Hassan.
The reason why I don't believe that the Israeli ends justify the means, and that's precisely the reason why I'm saying.
So why do you then say that Hamas is 1,000 times here's better why. Than Israel?
Because Israel has done an October 7 1,000 times over to the Palestinian population. Mm. The civilian casualty.
They often tell people where they're going to bomb. I'm not defending.
Even for the civilian, it doesn't make sense on the numbers there, but okay, buddy.
Israel. I'm not defending Israel, Hassan, but like I think that a lot of people, if you look at the facts,
Israel,
that's crazy.
But that's the point I'm driving home. And this is the reason why I have this conversation, because a lot of people have, due to social conditioning, this kind of hang up where they don't want to analyze the situation in an effort to actually make sure that there's.
Remember, when it's Jews, they're inbred and evil. But when it comes to the terrorists on the other side, every anti-Western terrorist, you have to devote books and books and books to understanding them and being compassionate towards their causes. The West, colonialism, colonial slop, West slop, evil slop, pig slop, Jew slop, inbred slop. But for enemies of the West, my God, do you not understand the conditions?
No more violence. I abhor
no,
violence.
No, just don't minimize October 7th. I mean, to compare it to, say, a British context, you could have absolutely said, I'm sure you would be in this position, you could say, look, I have complete solidarity with the Irish Republican cause. But you don't need to have solidarity with the Irish Republican army and what they did against the UK, killing innocent civilians. It is possible.
Oh, careful. I don't even know what this guy's aware of for the talking points, because I'm pretty sure Hassan will defend that.
To have both thoughts in your head at the same time, you can have complete solidarity with the Palestinian people without defending Hamas a single bit.
Solidarity with the IRA. Say it. He's going to say it. Where is it?
You defend Hamas. And that's what's objectionable about your point.
I defend anti-colonial resistance movements when there are aspects of their anti-colonial resistance or their ideology.
There's nothing to defend. They kill innocent people. There's nothing to defend. A lot of Palestinians don't defend them either. They hate them because they can kill innocent kids.
The question is this, right? The question I would present to you is this. Do you think that the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was a condemnable act by Jewish partisans that got together and organized to fight back?
I don't think the situation...
Jewish partisans? Like they were having a political meeting. They were like, all right, guys. We're going to fuck some Germans up today. Like, bro, they were already being death camp. They were on the road to complete and total annihilation. I wonder if, what was the name of that big boat that was turned around? I think they were going to go to America first, or were they going to go to Palestine and they got turned back to Germany? Because we were like, no. And then all the Jews got offloaded and killed. When did that happen? What was the year for that? I don't remember the year for that. 38, was it? I don't remember what the name was.
Situations are the same. No, because
why not? At that point, the Holocaust had not been completely implemented.
Oh, but Kristallnacht had.
Was it 39? 1939, the St. Louis carried more than 900 Jewish refugees from Nazi Germany, intending to escape anti-Semitic persecution. The refugees first tried to disembark in Cuba, but were denied permission to land. After Cuba, the captain, Gustav
Schroeder,
I don't know, went to the United States and Canada trying to find a nation to take the Jews in, but both nations said fuck off, and then they went back to Europe, where various countries, including the UK, Belgium, the Netherlands, and France, accepted some refugees. Following the German occupation of France, Belgium, and the Netherlands during World War II, many refugees were persecuted during the Holocaust, and some historians have estimated that approximately a quarter of them were killed in death camps. But the Warsaw Ghetto Uprising was like, we're all dying. We're, I don't even know what percentage had already been shipped out from Warsaw. And then it's like, well, do we have like a last stand? When was the Molotov-Ribbentrop? When was that broken? What year did Germany decide to go fucking full? Let's fuck the Soviets. Was it 41? Okay, so this was right after.
Epidemic destruction of Jewish people. Okay. They're all being rounded up into ghettos.
So
and I'm not
on.
Saying, Hassan, of course.
Years of apartheid?
And I don't.
Years of apartheid?
I do not for a single second.
Wasn't as violent?
I do not
of course
for
it was as violent.
I do not for a single second. And by the way, let's talk about the Warsaw Ghetto. That way they were attacking SS officers. They were attacking their oppressors, not kids at music festivals.
I don't disagree with you as far as the targeting of civilians. I'm simply stating, and there are condemnable actions, which I have condemned. What I'm simply stating is the principle overall of the end to the occupation and militant resistance in an effort to create an end to the occupation.
Like, this is propaganda slop that you need to slow the fuck down and chew through. And I just don't know anybody that's ever been willing to do this, or if any mainstream media program is willing to do this. So you're essentially saying that every tactic is justified as long as one side feels that they're righteous enough in their end goal.
What I'm simply stating is the principle overall of the end to the occupation and militant resistance in an effort to create an end to the occupation is literally a fundamental aspect of every successful liberation movement. So when I actually criticize, when I actually analyze the actions taken by not only Hamas, but also Hezbollah right now, for example, because Lebanon is currently being pummeled by Israel once again, I place the emphasis on the colonial occupant. I place the emphasis on the foreign occupying power because they hold all the cards.
Look, I get everything you say, but you know, when you say that Hamas is a thousand times better than Israel, I mean, let's leave aside the fact that Israel, whatever we think about it, is a democratic state, admittedly one that's been going down a more authoritarian direction. You say you'd vote for...
It's democratically in favor of genocide and apartheid. So
it's like, also got Arab Israelis and Palestinian Israelis who live there as citizens with others, so which is not the same as apartheid in South Africa.
They're considered second-class citizens as...
Well,
as,
I don't know what that means. How? What do you mean? Fuck bullshit.
Dictated by the Israeli constitution.
But the point
bullshit.
Is
there are varying degrees. There are varying degrees of discrimination in Israeli society.
But discrimination, racial discrimination, is not second class citizens. You fucking donkey. It's such a stupid fucking.
Tell you where there's a lot of discrimination under in Hamas run Gaza. I mean, how would you feel about being a gay?
Well, listen, they're getting bombed. What are you expecting them to do? Damn.
A man, for example, living under Hamas, or a woman, for example, that, and you say you would vote for them a thousand times over. You can't vote for them.
I know gay Palestinians, and they would say,
"Oh my God." When he says gay Palestinians, he means people born and raised in the United States of America that have no fucking idea where their Arab ancestors are from, but since they're somewhere in the Middle East, they just claim they're Palestinian-American.
The exact same thing that I'm about to tell you. The biggest threat to their existence is the Israeli occupation. They might have disagreements with Hamas. They might not
pushed off a bridge.
Elements. No, that's racialized.
It's not racialized. It literally happens. LGBT groups around the world have condemned her.
That's not true. That's simply not true.
Do you think it is literally
I will have
true.
To push back on this. All what you're saying... No, what you're saying is actually not true, and also a little bit messed up to say, because these groups are very different from one another. I am not an Islamist personally, obviously. I'm not someone who's ever going to be in favor of religious fundamentalism, but Hamas does not represent religious fundamentalist governance. It represents...
You can get up to 10 years in prison for being gay. Group. You can get up to 10 years in prison for being gay down the barrel of a Hamas gun. And that wouldn't happen to you in Tel Aviv. Whatever we think about Israel, that wouldn't happen to you in Tel Aviv.
It doesn't matter, because the gay people are being killed by Israeli bombs.
You might not think
Israel targets the gay people.
Yes, but you're the one saying that I would vote for them a thousand times ever. I agree with you.
Right now, as I have, they would tell you that the number one problem is not Hamas, it's Israel. There are Palestinians whose family members
there are lots of Palestinians
Hamas
who think Hamas
that
is
are from different that are different. Yes, exactly. There are Palestinians from different factions, right? There are Palestinians that are engaging in tribal conflict and sectarian conflict sometimes with Hamas. And yet, they will always tell you.
Maybe this is why you've been banned.
The number one problem from the Palestinian perspective, is of course the occupying forces, is of course the country that is maintaining an apartheid, the nuclear armed nation that has not only just done a genocide in the last 3 years, but also maintained an apartheid for the last 80 at this point. This is the reason why a lot of people...
You can believe that Israel has committed unbelievably appalling atrocities. You can even believe it's committed evil atrocities. You can even believe that it's committed a genocide while still believing that Hamas is morally and politically appalling, that you wouldn't say that I would vote for them a thousand times over Israel because it deliberately targets civilians. It deliberately targets civilians as an organization. It rejects coexistence and is fundamentally authoritarian and theocratic.
But here's the problem. Israel mathematically deliberately targets and destroys the lives of a far larger number of
civilians. So it's just a utilitarian
measure. Do we think that Palestinians are human beings? I think you and I don't disagree on this. They're human beings.
Do you think the Nazis were worse than the Israeli government?
Killed,
you think the Nazis were worse than the Israeli government,
thousands
right?
Thousands times. Let me ask you this question. If one party, if one government is killed a thousand times more, if not more than a thousand times more, civilians, as opposed to the other party, of course you're going to say one party is worse than
the Nazis. So like the U.S. is worse than ISIS. Every main country on the planet is worse than ISIS because every country has been involved in a war. It's probably killed more people than ISIS. It's not even like a child's approach to foreign policy. It's just like the most retarded thing in the universe.
Nazis. But you would accept the Nazis were worse than what the Israeli government has done.
So far, the Nazis, of course, are worse than what the Israeli government has done. However, my fear And this is the reason why genocide is not measured in how successful it was in wiping out an entire population. But instead, genocide nowadays, the statute itself is measured not with the actions alone, but also with the intent, because the whole purpose of the genocide statute is to stop a genocide.
But do you think this might be, Hassan, right? Why you've, and again, I don't agree with the fact you've been banned, but maybe.
Not really. Courts aren't there to stop things. They're just there to evaluate things after they've happened, but okay.
Maybe this is why you've been banned, because you openly support. Maybe ultimately this is why you've been banned. Again, I don't support your banning, but maybe the British government has decided, you know what?
I support it a little bit.
You know, no, I don't. I don't agree with a lot of what you say, but I'm absolutely happy for you to come to Britain.
Opinion on this.
Shabana Mahmood has a different view, clearly, and or at least the Home Office does. And maybe that's why, because ultimately they think that we don't need this guy over here openly praising an organization which this government has proscribed and which is a terrorist organization at a time when we do have a rising problem and an appalling problem with anti-Semitic violence in this country.
Mm-hmm. Ironically enough, the last time I was at Oxford Union, I delivered a speech
about anti-Semitism, because I hate anti-Semitism more than anyone, guys.
Extensively on anti-Semitism being the canary in the coal mine of fascism and how we must always oppose it. Since then, my opinion hasn't shifted on this issue. I think it's morally repugnant, it's odious, and it's wrong. Simply put, it's just the wrong calculation, because there are some people who will say, oh, well, a lot of Jewish people support Israel. Why don't you just oppose Jews? Are you too afraid to say it? And I always tell them, like, this is...
Why would I support Jews when I could just be oppositional to any kind of Zionist thought, which basically nets up, like, 90% of Jews anyway, right? Like, that's what he's...
is not the case, because Jews are not a monolith. No group of individuals are a monolith. If Jews were monolithic in their approach to Israel, then there wouldn't be a multi-million dollar propaganda initiative that specifically targets young American Jews. I don't know how it is in the UK, but young American Jews, and indoctrinate them into Zionism early on, which has been failing spectacularly, which is part of the reason why a lot of people attack me, I think, because, you know, I have a lot of anti-Zionist Jews in my community, and I'm, you know, proud to stand by them. And the point that I want to make here is this. You might disagree with my assessment on or the evolution of Hamas's tactics, for example, switching from military targets exclusively to civilian targets. I oppose that.
I think killing civilians under any circumstances is wrong, whether it's Israelis or Hamas doing it.
The reason why I say Israel's 1,000 times worse than Hamas.
No, I think the principle is the same. I think the principle is the same. I don't think, I'm not a utilitarian, clearly, in the same way that you are, Hassan. I don't think that just because you kill.
Do you disagree that Israel has killed 1,000 times more civilians than Hamas?
I don't know what the statistics are, but I would accept completely that Israel has killed lots of civilians, and it's absolutely heinous. But unlike.
How many people died on October 7th? It was 1,300? I don't think Israel has killed 1,000 times more Arabs than that in the history of the entire country. 1,000? Would be like over 1,000,000? Okay.
Unlike you, I would draw a moral equivalence between those acts, but you seem to be willing to more, because you're attached to a sort of anti-colonial ideology, you are willing to basically dismiss one and favor the other, and I'm not. That's the difference between us.
I don't think you're not favoring either party. I think that there is a level of...
I think murder of civilian is wrong, full stop. I don't see it as an anti-colonial struggle. I think it's wrong, full stop. I don't think it gets them anywhere.
Country. There's a level of understandable sympathy demonstrated by people in Western society, especially towards a country that has been a cooperative ally for a very long time. I totally understand that. It's a byproduct of our social conditioning. We look to a country, and you've mentioned it over and over again. You keep saying, well, it's a democratic process. There is a democracy in Israel, and I keep telling you that it's an apartheid system, so their democratic process is irrelevant.
That doesn't really make sense if you push him what he means by that, but he would say that, well, the people in the West Bank and the Gaza Strip maybe can't vote, maybe, but I don't know what he means by, they always say like Israel proper is an apartheid as well, but this is retarded.
There are literally Arab-Israeli parties in the Knesset. You didn't get that in apartheid South Africa.
I know, and
so it's not the same,
enough,
is it?
No, there's varying degrees. There's varying degrees of brutality here that we're talking about. You're referencing only Israel proper, and I guess the extension now with the settlement project as well. But Israel isn't just Tel Aviv.
Oh, nice. Yes, you're referencing. So he's going to say the West Bank and the Gaza Strip. Yeah.
The Israel that we point to. Israel is a singular sovereign occupant state that dominates the lives of the almost 10 million Palestinians that live there.
What would
in the West Bank and in Gaza. Gaza is a hermetically sealed open air prison that's being bombed and is being genocided and ethnically cleansed. And the West Bank has been an occupied state, illegally occupied, mind you, militarily, where the citizens don't have any rights whatsoever. They have separate roads, separate license plates. They constantly have to go through this bureaucratic nightmare, this security tyranny that they've created for the Palestinians in their ancestral homeland.
Just on British politics, because I know I'm running out of time. What would your message be to the Home Secretary, Shabana Mahmood? Do you want to be let back into Britain?
Yes, I do. I think it's terrifying that the Labour government is creating this environment that
Labour government
instead of leaning in to the democratic wishes of the majority that look at what Israel has done and look at the cooperation of the British government with Israel in horror, understandable horror. and demand an end to it, the British government has very clearly moved in the opposite direction of repression. Instead of addressing these needs, the government is instead telling people that they can't actually protest against this. And there's been silly prescriptions like Palestine Action. I think you and I would probably agree that that was a little bit silly to prescribe Palestine Action as a terrorist organization, right? And then also the prosecution of the arrest of pensioners and you know, the elderly for holding up a placard that says Palestine Action. Maybe I'm too American for this, but I find that to be, you know, ridiculous, right?
Do you think that actually inadvertently the British government, certainly to potential, I mean, you've got millions and millions of people who watch and listen to you. Do you think that they've magnified your message?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's been a spectacular failure for them, because if I came into the country and did my South by Southwest thing and did, you know, the Oxford Union speech and whatnot, I'm sure it would have gone as every other time I've been to the UK. You know, people are excited to see me there. It's fine. I have a lot of fans in the UK as well. But now, now there is this major media crisis, this moment where people are looking at what the government is doing and are worried about the implications of it, which I think is a healthy amount of friction. I mean, this is a part of the complex the complex process of democracy, right? As long as we can still fight for it, as long as we can still maintain it, hopefully. And I do want that to take place.
And just finally, just briefly, on American politics, which we haven't really had much time to discuss. We're obviously gearing up towards the midterms. Trump is doing what Trump does. He said the other day that he doesn't really care about any effect that the Iran war has had on American consumer prices, or he's much bothered. He seems to be in a slightly unusual place where he's decided that he's not much bothered about public opinion at this point. But what's your assessment as a very leading sort of figure on the left in American politics?
Jesus
about where the Democratic
Christ.
Party is now. And the
what was it, 80% of, or 85% of Democratic voters have never even heard of Hassan, and now he's a leading figure on the... Oh, my God.
The internal discussion about where the Democratic Party should position itself. Where do you think the Dems are at?
There's a divergence between the Democratic Party as a party and the base of support. The base of support, the voters, lifelong Democrats, and even independents, as a matter of fact, have completely moved further and further to the left in this process, where they want fighters. They want real fighters that will...
Remember, it's always the base is like way further left than the actual elected politicians, but every time they lose elections, it's propaganda or something else. Like, yeah.
We'll try to stop the Trump administration no matter what it takes, including sometimes directly physically.
What?
The base of support, the voters, lifelong Democrats, and even independents, as a matter of fact, have completely moved further and further to the left in this process, where they want fighters. They want real fighters that will try to stop the Trump administration no matter what it takes, including sometimes directly physically protesting, right? Certain initiatives, like demanding that Hakeem Jeffries come out and like participate in the act of physical protest, even if it's symbolic. Whereas the party itself has taken this interesting stance, this interesting approach, where instead of opposing the administration as aggressively as they could, they've decided to wait it out. This was spelled out by James Carville early on, where they said James Carville straight up came out as a Democratic consultant, worked with the Clintons, and he said, show your belly. It doesn't matter, because the people will recognize how devastating the Trump administration is. There's this attitude like where I think some centrist Democrats want to punish the public so that they come to terms with how devastating the Trump administration is. And then there's no other option other than, you know, harm reduction voting, which clearly demonstrably failed as a theory in the last election cycle. I find that to be morally repugnant, and I find that to be far too conciliatory to the needs of the growing fascist movement, because I see the danger of MAGA fascism.
I just have to ask you...
I'm not alone in this either.
No,
there's
I'm
a
sure.
lot of people.
I just have to ask you this. I did notice this week when looking at some of the things that you've been talking about recently. I know that one of your favorite candidates for Nancy Pelosi's congressional seat, she's obviously the former speaker, she's standing down after, you know, many years since she was elected in 1986, I think. And the Dems, obviously, it's a plum seat in San Francisco, in California, where you are now. And I think that the person that you were supporting failed to progress the other day against two other candidates.
Yeah.
And I think you used to work for AOC, and you said it's just effing rich liberals who just want homo fascism in this country. That's it. They want gay fascism.
Uh-oh.
They want gay techno fascism. What did you mean by that? What's gay techno fascism?
Really, just about San Francisco, though. And it wasn't about Shoykot's race in general. I think it was more so about some of the California liberals that, unlike the rest of the country, are not as we're not as activated, rather, as some of these other places where people are demanding more.
What's gay techno fascism? Right.
What I'm referencing, of course, is the comfort that they have with like what level of progressive politics that they're open to. It's not a secret that, you know, Peter Thiel, Sam Altman, numerous Silicon Valley tech CEOs are bringing about this new techno feudalist dystopia that we're currently living under, and they themselves are open-minded or rather libertarian when it comes to certain qualities, like certain civil liberties, obviously LGBTQ liberties, and maybe abortion protections. But everything else outside of that, whether it be immigrants' rights or you know, anti-black racism, Islamophobia, they will throw that by the wayside. These are not issues that they necessarily care about. And what I'm referencing there is a pink-washed version of the type of fascism that some wealthy liberals are comfortable with.
It's just like an insane amount of like sloganeering and buzzwords and propaganda in every single answer. Holy shit.
Again, we know what would have happened to gays under fascist regimes, don't we?
Yes, no, I think it's very dangerous. I think, well, it's the same principle behind like Jewish cooperatives with the Trump administration as well.
Oh my God.
This is a real warning for every marginalized group that thinks that tokens don't get spent at the end of the day. These guys are inevitably going to oppose all of these groups when there's a better opportune time. So I think we have to fight back with intersectionality and fight back fast and fight back hard.
Is it easy to have intersectionality when you're warning about homo fascism?
Yes, of course.
Doesn't sound very intersectional.
Well, if you think that my warnings about liberal cooperation with a fascist movement by the likes of Peter Thiel and Sam Altman is actually homophobic, I guess we can have a conversation around that. I don't think so, and neither does my audience. My entire community is queer.
When do we think the ban will be lifted, if ever?
That actually might be true, just because queer is a meaningless fucking word that people just use to describe like an alt aesthetic, basically. But okay.
When can we actually expect to see you in the UK?
After this conversation, probably not anytime soon. But
no, I think this will help you.
We'll see. I mean, I'm probably going to work with some immigration attorneys to try to identify exactly what took place, because at the end of the day, there are plenty of people who oppose my worldview, think I'm crazy, whatever, right? But I think what we can all unite under is, one, the principle of defending free expression. As long as it doesn't cross certain boundaries that actually do reach into like fomenting violence and like deliberately trying to cause a riot, like inciting a riot or things of that nature. Like I'm obviously going to be respectful of the countries that I visit and the opinions that I have on that. And it's not something that I am interested in doing anyway. Inciting a riot is ridiculous. But the other thing is that this process of revocation of visas is actually very opaque. And I think that's somewhat of a problem, that the Home Secretary can just like issue these kinds of travel bans without ever really even revealing why they did so, without ever actually saying, here are the reasons why we oppose this person coming into the country. And I think that's been one of the most confusing elements of this entire ordeal. I was actually shocked because, you know, I mean, I was first and foremost shocked because I think that perhaps falsely, I assume that the British government has always maintained this attitude that they would defend free expression and freedom of speech, unconditionally.
Unconditionally.
But then also beyond that, I was shocked at how not transparent this process was.
Hassan Palik, it's been an absolute pleasure to speak to you. And who knows, maybe we'll see you in London soon. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you for having me.
And then this is all Hassan's comment section, I'm guessing. Don't want to be compared to Nazis? Don't do what Nazis did. LOL. And yes, Lewis, there were people of color in the South African parliament before 1991. Do you think Palestinian Israelis have any power in parliament? Israel would never allow that. Well, okay. The tone policing when someone criticizes Israel is very tiresome. Have you noticed that his fans are way more active recently? Do you think they're about supporting him? Well, I think that the whole like far lefty network is a lot more activated right now. So he's got the support broadly of them. And then it wouldn't surprise me if bot networks start to pick up more. They should have been to some extent already, but start to pick up more on amplifying a lot of his stuff, especially because it's so anti-Western. So that wouldn't be surprising either. I'm ashamed of the Starmer government. People often talk about the Holocaust like it just happened one day and that there was a definite start. One day there was no Holocaust, the next day there was one. There's always a ramping up to fascism. It's a process. Lewis is coming across as such a stooge. It is painful to watch. Embarrassing for Lewis. He came out of this one in a bad light. Disappointed in Lewis's argument, still does not acknowledge the abhorrent actions of the Israeli or of the Israel state for over 70 years. Lewis working overtime to defend Israeli settlers from being called Nazis. Remember when these people on the left say Israeli settlers, they're talking about every single person that lives in Israel, so.
Dude.
Why are you leaving me a 4-month old Hassan video?
Is Bad Imp on a working with Sex Pestini?
What? After you openly worked with him? What?
I genuinely think he is. I think he might have just fucking totally switched sides of this.
That's crazy. That is insane to say. After literally watching him doxing people on his stream who were friends of mine.
Is Batman been...
Wait, we already have this open. What is this?
Point. He just despises, like... He pulled, like a... Remember when Glenn Greenwald hated liberals so much that he just basically became a Republican? I think he's actually doing that now.
Glenn Greenwald is just a sloppulist. He's not a Republican, but he'll just support the sloppulists on the right and the left. Why do people pretend not to see this?
Oh. Like, he hates other anti-Zionists so much. He thinks Adam Hamawi is not pro-Palestine.
Are you okay, bro?
I think he might be getting paid.
What is it? He's getting paid.
Not this guy. I'm talking about Bad Empanada, and his fan base is stupid enough to go along with
he's
it.
He's getting paid 1,000,000,000%. He absolutely is.
If he's Bad Empanada's video history, he started punching right and got a solid base, and it was 1 in 5 punching left and 2 in 5. Now it's all punching left. I increasingly believe it's a plant. I think so too.
Oh my god.